Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I too am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello there, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is Kim at Villa de Justice. Last week I told you was going to be my last week at Fort Justice, and this week we're in our new house. And boy, has it been a trip. This would be challenging for anyone, but for someone with a brain injury, especially so when it comes to things like sensory overload and lack of patience, and emotionally volcanic behavior. I've just had them all. But it's going to be a lovely house as soon as we get the ravine out of the basement, and we'll talk about that later. Anyway, hope you guys are having a good Wednesday night. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest, like tonight. I'm so excited to have Ruby with me. Others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. For those of you who don't know or are new to the program, I do welcome your questions and comments, but I do interview our guest first without interruption because this host, all of our hosts actually, are brain injury survivors, and I tend to jump off the track and something shiny. Murphy's Law. Can you guys hear me now? Hopefully. Don't know what that was. Maybe Martians in the new crib, or just the way my luck's been going a little bit lately. But in any case, I'm hoping you guys can hear me, and we're going to find out in 1 minute when I introduce our guest, Ruby Taylor. Almost 2 years ago, Ruby A. Taylor, MSW, was in a car accident. Hit her car and gave her a concussion, which later turned into a traumatic brain injury. Because of the injury, her life turned down. Ruby is currently on a mission to take away the shame and embarrassment of brain injury and help survivors recover through the support of family, friends, and professionals. Ruby Taylor is the founder of Adventures. Ever since a traumatic brain injury prevented her from doing what she loves, social work, Ruby created her life mission to change the world from the Bronx, New York. She's currently residing in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She's a graduate of Virginia Union University and Howard University's School of Social Work. Ruby's first documentary, Mad Believer, explored Ruby's feeling of anger. Mad Believer was screened at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, accepted in the Metro Area Film Festival and Urban Philadelphia Film Festival. Ruby's excited about offering her free ebook, 99 Problems and my brain is one, informational and inspirational blog posts, documentaries, and workshops for awareness, discussion, and support for brain injury survivors and their families. I'm going to give you her website shortly and frequently during the show, but first, I'm going to let you hear from Ruby. Ruby, are you with me? Okay, maybe not. Ruby, are you with me?
Yes, I am. I'm with you.
Good gracious.
Can you hear me now?
Thank God, sister. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, that's a good thing. That's a positive, right?
Oh, good. Yes. Now I feel much better now that you're here. You can tell me if you can't hear and I fade away. Not sure what happened. I lost my Skype connection. So anybody out there Skyping tonight, it may not just be you, or it may just be me. So how you doing tonight, Ruby?
I am well. I'm coming along one day at a time.
Exactly. Right? I've been practicing that one myself quite a bit lately. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit. I like to start at the beginning. Obviously, they know, the audience knows that you got into a car accident, but can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing before and then what happened? And we'll go on from there and talk a little bit about the process you went through after your intro to brain injury.
Okay. Before, I was the world's greatest aunt, and I still am, but that can be questionable, right? Right about now. But I was a school social worker, and I worked with emotionally disturbed children from the age of 6 up until 20, and
wow.
And I loved it. It was one of my highlights. And I also helped teenage girls increase their self-worth, and I also help people grieve and heal. So I did a lot, and I loved it, and I would travel, and I would speak about various topics, but the main one was grief and loss and how to reach the place called healing. And one of the things that I love was I love being my parent's right hand child, meaning whatever my parents needed, I was there, and I loved that. So that was me prior to my...
So you were quite the caregiver in a lot of different ways, in your job, with your family. So you had quite a bit of experience on the caregiving side, and
yes.
Now you get the introduction to the other side.
And I did not like that at all. I like to be the doing. I don't like to be the receiver. It was a little difficult for me to basically accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's still somewhat of like a struggle, but I have accepted it much, much more than in the beginning.
Well, and it's only been two years, hasn't it?
Well, it feels like a lifetime to me.
Yeah,
yes,
I bet.
Yes,
I bet
it's only been 2 years. But it's only been almost two years, correct? Correct.
Okay, so you get in this car accident, and they tell you in the beginning that you have a concussion. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so you get in a car accident, they take you, the doctors determine that you have a concussion, and what later, you say that later turned into a traumatic brain injury. For the people who might not be familiar, and I think I know exactly what you're talking about, but explain how that worked. You go in and you've had a blow to the head, whether it's from a car accident or some other type of occurrence, and they diagnose you with a concussion. How do you know that that's a traumatic brain injury? What happened to distinguish it from what was deemed a concussion on the spot to becoming a TBI?
Because of all of my changes, I had a personality change. I was not able to smile. I wasn't able to laugh. And because of testing, they've done a lot of testing. I went to a neuropsychologist, and a family doctor who like specialized in sports medicine, and with that team, they are the ones who said, no, this is not just a concussion. This is a traumatic brain injury, and like the difference is a concussion, you will like bounce back. A brain injury, even though they like could not see it structurally, but they said chemically the brain had changed, and so chemically within my frontal lobe, I had many changes that made me curse, that gave me sleeping problems, and it also gave me emotional problems. I would cry. I wouldn't know what I was crying for. It was just, and I would become angry, and I would become aggressive, which is not my regular personality. And so that's how they figured it out. That it was more than just a concussion.
And how long did that take? Do you remember about how long that took for them to be able to? First of all, I think it's wonderful that you had people who were savvy to the facts of what's going on in reality right now, because so many people are misdiagnosed and overlooked, and they go years and years and years and years till they get the appropriate diagnosis. So I'm grateful that fairly early on you got that, you know, that diagnosis and had a team of professionals, like I say, that were hip to the reality of things. It seems like a lot of folks in the traditional medical model are about a decade behind, but we're hoping that messages like this and films like yours and things like Brain Injury Radio will help that cause. So what amount of time would you say that it took for you inside your head to realize that something was really wrong, or did it take you a while? Were you even noticing that you were behaving differently than you did before right away?
Not at first. At first, I was off of work for like a couple of days, and then I went back, and my boss, she says, Ruby, there is something wrong. And I was like, I was in an accident and I don't feel great, so maybe that's what the wrong is. And so then some of my kids, they was like, Miss, you just keep on repeating yourself. You just keep on saying the same thing over and over. And, like, I didn't even notice that. And so then my boss said, you need to go back to your doctor because, like, there is something seriously wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first clue that, like, something was not right. And then this was during the wintertime. And I like to turn off my heat because I like to save cash because I like cash. So I like to turn off my heat. And, like, I would, like, get up, and then I would just stare. And I wouldn't know what the hell I was. I didn't know what I was doing until I got cold. Then I said, damn it, I forgot to, like, turn on the heat. And then it was stuff like that. And then I would be driving, and I wouldn't know where the hell I was. So those were, like, indicators that, like, something is seriously not right. And like, stuff like that was, like, indicators. And then after that, I could not use my hands when I wanted to. So if I wanted to pick up a fork, the brain wouldn't let me. I would, like, try, and, like, it just wouldn't go. And so they said it was like a short circuit. And the message just was not connecting. So that was, like, embarrassing because I couldn't pick up a cup when I wanted to. So things like that made me know. And, like, when I couldn't laugh and when I, like, could not smile, because I love smiling, I love laughing, I love a wonderful joke. When I could not do that, I knew that, oh, my God, it was the worst.
Yeah, well, definitely. You had a profound change in personality.
And then this. I could not sleep. And I am a sleeper. Nobody has to tell me time for, like, I'm bed. I always go to bed at, like, a reasonable time. And, like, I could not sleep. I would, like, be up all night. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, so, like, all of that. And then I couldn't read, and I could not multitask. So if I was on the phone, I would only have to be on the phone. And if I was, like, driving, I could not have the radio on. I couldn't do nothing but just focus on that one thing. Mm-hmm. Or else it just couldn't work. It just didn't work. And that was not me normally.
Right. Yeah, I call that the full basket syndrome for me. A lot of times when there's too many, to me, not the extreme. I can drive with the radio on at this point. I'm a long ways further down the road than you are. I can't really remember back then. But, you know, when too many new things come at once, it's very hard to not lose it, you know, when you never did before, and particularly when you were used to being a multitasker, you know.
Yeah.
I think part of it is the shock of the change in yourself. It takes a moment to realize that you've changed, you know, to have that awareness I was talking about in the four A's, you know, first just becoming aware. And so, of course, you had That's a master's in social work. I had a question from the crowd. She has a master's in social work and was a social worker. Okay. Anyway, yeah, to have the awareness yourself that something's going on is so shocking. And then I don't know if you were like me, that once I became aware, I tried to act as if that wasn't the case and tried so hard to go back to the old me that I was really spinning my wheels, you know. It never occurred to me I was always going to be like that, and I was going to have to adjust, you know, my way of living and my way of thinking and my way of doing things. Back in those first couple of years where you're at, I had no idea. Of course, now I didn't, there wasn't a support group in 1995, and there's still not where I live, unfortunately. And I didn't have a team like the team that you had after my brain aneurysm ruptured, and they, no, and I don't give them any small credit for this, you know, they saved my life with a craniotomy. They sent me out into the universe without a handbook or any, no pun intended, heads up, you know, that my life might be different or that I might be facing some challenges, nor my family at the time, you know, the caregivers. Nobody told them. And so out of the clear blue, something like this happens, and nobody's got a playbook.
Exactly. And that's what makes it rough, because like, it's just not about you. It's about everyone connected to you. But in the beginning, you don't even see that. It's all right. About me. It's all about my life. It's all about changes that I am having a rough time accepting. And like, when I went home to like visit maybe a year out, and like my niece, they just like to be around me, because I am awesome. I know this. they just like to be around me. And like, I could not handle it. I didn't want them. It just made me feel overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And like my oldest sister said, like, Ruby, you are really, really hurting one of my niece's feelings. She just feel like rejected. And mm-hmm. like, it still makes me want to cry. Because, like, that was never my, like, intention. And, like, people don't understand, especially children. They don't really get it, because, like, before, like, we would have a good time. We would, like, tear up the road. We would be all over the place. But now I just can't. My brain hurts. As soon as my brain hurts, my whole physical body is just in pain. Mm-hmm. And, like, they don't understand that. And so that's, like, one of the rough things, to be able to, like, have a balance, to just get out of myself and to, like, see their hurt and to try to help them understand. And, like, That is still a balance. I have not perfected that, but I will, because I am awesome. Mm-hmm. I have not perfected it yet, and like, it's really rough. People don't get it, because like, you really, really look well. You look great.
Right.
Why
right.
can't you do what you like used to do? They really don't understand. And So it's rough. It is rough. But two of my favorite words are, but God. So no matter how rough, God, grace, is sufficient. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to preach, because like preaching does not mean I'm crap. You really have to live it. So basically, I'm not trying to preach. I'm just trying to live. And,
well, you know, that's one that I do too, though. I say, I can't, he can, let him.
Yes. 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 And like, I'm going to give you another example. When I first had my injuries, my wonderful mother, who I love deeply, she wanted to come down to like help me, and I was adamant about her not coming, because number one, it would just overwhelm me, and like she did not understand. She was like livid. She did not get it, and like I tried to have my cousin talk to her, and she finally accepted it. But it was hard. It was hard for her. Very, very hard. Because she and I, we have a wonderful relationship. And like, it just changed because I can't be there, you know? But I am
right.
Still there. I'm still there. But not like I used to be, you know? Mm. Because I can't do it. I can't drive. I can only drive locally, and that is still questionable, but I do drive locally, and but I can't drive the long distances like I once did. And so I haven't been home since like Christmas, because I can't do that trip. It's just horrendous for me.
Mm.
And that's another thing. People say, Ruby, you off. You off of work. You can just go in. you can go anywhere. And I'm like, no, I can't. I wish I could. That's wonderful. I do have the time, and I do have the money. But like, I just can't pick up and just go, because it drains me physically, mm-hmm. emotionally. And just intellectually, it just drains me. So I have to pick and choose when I'm going
yes.
to travel.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I think that was one of the hard things to, you know, for me to come to grip with, is so often, and even now, and I notice other hosts doing it, you know, we'll overextend our reach. We'll be thinking, you know, about the laundry list of things we got to do, need to do, can accomplish. And about the second one, you know, our butt's dragging and we're ready to lay down and take a nap or cry or strangle somebody or something like
yes.
that. And it's hard to explain to other people when you have the silent epidemic. You know, if you have evident symptoms, it's not as hard to make people understand, you know, that you can't, that you do have to pick and choose. I mean, there might be a Saturday afternoon, a family function in the late afternoon, a party that you want to go to that night, but you know a couple things as a brain-injured person. First, there's a chance that it's going to be hard for you to make a commitment and keep it for any of those things. Second,
right.
that you're going to have to pick the one and prioritize which one is most important to you a lot of times, and know that your stamina is only going to let you get through that one thing. That's very hard to explain to people. And so when you said that about the niece with the hurt feelings, I understand that, because, you know, people can't see, and it seems like an odd, you know, when you used to be somebody that, you know, was a real go-getter, and all of a sudden you're having to pick and choose what things you're going to be able to do and tolerate without having to be in bed the next 2 or 3 days with the payback for it, that's a difficult thing to project to other people. Right. You know, they don't understand that when they've known you before, because you don't look like you should be somebody struggling with such a thing. So it's really hard to make people understand. And one of the things that you've done, so it's been 2 years, so you find out a ways into it that this is a TBI. You're kind of now starting to recognize things like sensory overload and full basket syndrome. And by the way, back in the day, I didn't have these labels for these things. I didn't know what these things meant. And then it was only 2 years ago when I became a host on Brain Injury Radio and went to a lot of shows and hosted a lot of shows and had guests on like yourself, that I started learning ways to describe what was going on with me and labels for them. And so it's a totally different ball game when I go to the doctor now. A lot of times they still look at me with a blank stare, but when I walk in, I'm able to rattle off now these little catchphrases that encapsulate the things that I'm struggling with. And I find that very helpful, because in the beginning I was buying where too many of us get sent, and that's that I was crazy.
Right, and I have a story about that. I went to a neuropsychologist, and she will remain nameless. My like doctor said, Ruby, do not take the impact test no more. I already gave it. We need to have your. We just don't need that test, right? No more, because it gave me a meltdown, and it looks horrendous when I have a meltdown. But this medical professional wanted me to take it, even though I told her my like family doctor said no. But you know, she forced me. I untucked it, and then I had a meltdown. And then she tried to 302 me, which is try to commit you into a psychiatric ward. And and I said, you can't 302 me, because I know all of the damn questions, because I used to 302 kids.
That's right. You were the one administering. Mm-hmm.
You can't 302 me. You can like 302 somebody else, but not I. So anyway, I was so upset, I like cursed her out, and I left. And then I couldn't find my car inside the parking lot. So,
no.
So now I'm having a meltdown inside the parking lot. So now I'm questioning, maybe I need to go. So then I called my doctor, and I said, Doctor, Vollmer, this woman wants me to like go inside a hospital. She was like trying to 302 me. He said, Ruby, you do not need a hospital. Get out of there. Don't you dare go back. She just does not understand brain injury. And like, I'm so thankful for him. Because if not, I would have like doubted myself, and I would have probably went back. But like, he is a wonderful doctor who really, really gets it. And like, I'm so, so thankful, because like there are so many brain injured sisters and brothers going in and out of the mental health sector, and
yeah.
like Some of them do not need it. You cannot treat our symptoms the same way as a mental illness. It's not going to work. That medication is going to be limited. You know what I'm saying? So if you keep on medicating and medicating and medicating, those symptoms are not going to, like, disappear.
Mm-mm.
And, like, they can be, what is the word, managed. They can be managed. But as for a pill disappearing those symptoms, no, it's not going to work.
Well, and some even make it worse because if you've got a memory problem, a lot of the anti-anxiety drugs and the antidepressants, one of the side effects is that they affect your memory. So you take somebody who's organic, got an organic problem, you know, from an injury who has short-term, most of us seem to have short-term memory loss. Some have, you know, long-term as well. But then, as you say, keep medicating and medicating with drugs that play right into the residuals we've left with, you know, that we're left with.
Right. Right. So, like, I'm just thankful for a wonderful team, a wonderful, wonderful medical team, and wonderful family that has been supportive. That has helped me most of the time. The other times I'm just praying about. But like most of the time they've been helpful. They've been helpful sometimes. Right. So
that's good. What about friends? You said your family lives away in another state. How are your friends and how did your boss was one of the first to, because she was around you every day, that was noticing something was wrong, kind of some of the impetus of getting you to get yourself checked out. What about other friends and coworkers? Were they noticing, and did you have changes in the relationships in your life, like a lot of people who come on here and talk about lost relationships, people that don't understand, don't accept, and they lose spouses, they lose best friends?
I will say this. My job really treated me like I'm trash, and my friendships that I basically had, I do not have with them. But I do have one great friend. Her name is Jen, and she has been a wonderful support. Wonderful, wonderful support. I cannot say that enough. And and I have another friend, Brisselle. She has been a wonderful support. And my cousin Jesse. He has also been a wonderful, wonderful support. And my friend Stephanie. Stephanie is a little different because, like, before, like, we were really, really close friends. She was like my sister, but life basically happened, and like we were not like close. But as soon as I had my injury, she became like a wonderful, wonderful supporter. She called me weekly, checked in. And Lori is another wonderful friend. So like my friends from like college, they really became a wonderful support system. My friends here, there was one, there were several: Melissa, Jen, Renee, and I'm Dan, and I'm Jen, and I'm Dan. That is a whole nother set of them couples. They were like wonderful, but as for my job, oh my God, horrendous. horrendous. They put me through the ringer, and they are still trying to put me through the ringer. But I'm moving on. I won't even talk about the school district that I gave so much to. But it was not for them. It was for God. So it doesn't even matter. What matters...
Yeah, go on.
Go ahead. No, what was you going to suspend?
I don't know. Do you remember?
No.
I was going to say that isn't it ironic that the people we thought were our best friends and supporters often go by the wayside, and the people we never would have suspected are the ones that step up to the plate. I noticed that myself, and I've heard other people say that. The ones you thought were your best buds, your BFFs that would stand by you, are suddenly, you know, like rats jumping off a ship, and people that, you know, those are the gifts, I think, you know, some of the gifts that we get from the God of our understanding is that when invariably that's going to happen, people aren't going to understand, they're going to be afraid of it, they're not going to want to tolerate it, they're going to go through their whole spectrum of feelings, and that affects us, and we lose those support relationships. I think the gifts come in the people that are a surprise. We never would have suspected, you know, that as that old saying about when one door closes, another one opens, I think that's true with relationships as well. And it hurts at the time, but, you know, later on, I think, at least for me, I wouldn't want those kind of people as friends anyway. Yes?
Kim, I would prefer if you just say the word. It just hurts like a bitch. You know, it makes you thankful. It makes you thankful. God, they were not there for me, no way. And like, I live in another like support system. I live in a condo, and my neighbors have really come out the woodwork to help me. And like, they have been wonderful. I cannot say that enough. They became my family, and I thank God for them, especially Uncle Henry and Auntie Jean. They are my neighbors who I love so much. I made them my aunt and my uncle, and they have prayed for me. They have fed me. They have given me a weekly allowance. They have just been totally awesome.
Nice.
And I can't thank God enough for them, and like for like all of my wonderful friends who have been loving, supportive, and just a listening ear.
Right. Which brings us to, I want to talk a little bit, I want to tell people now about your website. I didn't want to tell it before, but what you're describing right now is compassion, right? Those
yes.
are the people that have compassion in your life. And so you became a person, you became a person who appreciated people that had compassion. And I think if you're like me, you were obviously, because of your job and everything else, a compassionate person before, but you have a greater insight now. You know, it's like a quilt, you know, or prisms, more layers or levels of compassion I think we're capable of feeling now that we've walked down the road that we have. But I was going to ask you what brought you to films. Well, I still want to ask you that, but I know that your first one did have to do with brain injury. We can talk about that if you want or not, but before that even, what brought you to the point? So now you can't do your job anymore. You're between that, what I call the tweener stage, where you know you can't go back to the old me, but you don't quite know who the new me is going to be. Unfortunately, a lot of people get stuck right there, and we lose them because they don't get unstuck and find recovery, you know, find a higher power to help them through this process to the other side. In that tweener stage, you made a decision to take action that was positive that would move you forward. And for you, it was – and one, another thing I think is really cool is that I've heard a lot now the last couple of years that some people were artistic before and some were not. I was not. I was a business person for 25 years and didn't flex any artistic abilities. And suddenly, quite a ways, after I had had my injury, this artistic aspect of writing and photography and hosting and doing all this art, artistic stuff was coming out of me. A new way of expression was another gift I feel like I was given in back of this. And for you, it was film. How did you come to that?
Well, first it was writing. I was writing a journal about my experience. And I lost the book, and it crushed me because the book was finished. It was, like, already filled, and I was just reading it over and over again, correcting it, and the book had been lost, and it was hard. It was hard for me to accept that, but then I realized that was not what God wanted me to let him do. So I said, okay, God, you didn't want me to write the book for now. What is it that you want me to do? So I was like, I'm going to film. I'm going to pick up a camera, and I'm just going to talk. And I'm going to – then it just, like, developed into something different. And then, like, that's how the film became. And I'm like, I can do a documentary. And that's what made me do it because like, I lost the book, and I just felt that that was not the medium God wanted because if he did, I would have still had the book. And so I just feel that he just wanted me to, like, go into the filming. And so that's what I did.
And the first one was about – I'm sorry. And then the first one was about your brother and how you found – now, this was after your – no. When did this film, Mad Believer, fall? Before or after your brain injury?
Before.
Okay, so you had done a little dabbling in film before that, and with quite a bit of acclaim on that one. You did very, very well with, you know, the places you were accepted, the film festivals and so forth. So you definitely had a gift for that. And at that time, you probably had no idea that you were going to be pursuing these documentaries to your own individual story.
Right. No, I just thought that that was going to be a one-shot deal. And but then the brain injury happened. And, like, now I know that it's a wonderful way to get people to understand people's lives and for them to have an increased awareness. And once we have awareness, compassion comes. Once we have compassion, supports come. So basically, mm-hmm. I want to use the film to basically increase brain injury awareness so that support and compassion can come for brain injury survivors, which is so needed for our healing. Without it, it can turn into a lot of negatives, you know, alcohol, drugs, suicide. It can be a lot of negatives without the support, without the compassion. So I feel led to basically help in that way.
Yes. I just wrote into the chat room, and I just want to mention at this point to everybody, because we'll mention it a couple times now. I didn't want to give this away in the beginning, but the website you can check out is compassionpictures.net, and I put a direct hyperlink into the chat room. There's also one on the program page if you're seeing the program page on the internet. Otherwise, again, www.compassionpictures.net. And my guest is Ruby Taylor, a master's in social work. Okay, Ruby, go on. So you get the compassion and you decide to start your own film company in order to help raise awareness and help hopefully increase advocacy for brain injuries.
Yeah.
And the first, or was it the first? You correct me if I'm wrong, because I was looking over your site, but I had quite a bit of time this last week where I didn't have internet service in the process of this move, but I'm still here smiling through the storms. Was that, that's a little bit of what I think that's what I watched on your website. Is that right?
Yes. That's the first film coming out.
Okay, good. I encourage you to take a look at that. That is on that compassionpictures.net. I'm still here smiling through the storms. Nice, very nice piece of work. And you talk about next film. You're welcome. What are you thinking of there? Got any thoughts on that yet?
Oh, yes. My next film is going to be called Laughter, and I'm going to use different people's stories on how laughter helped them through their brain injury journey. So if anybody would like to be inside the film, check out the website and, like, contact me. I would love to know. I would love to come on over and, like, film you. So that's going to be my next project, because, like, laughter really, really helped me once I was able to laugh.
Me too.
And I started a page when I was not able to laugh. I, like, started a Facebook page called Smiling Counts. And it grew to around 4,000 likes.
And wow.
It was a very, very very successful page. And like every day I would like post things that would make me smile. And like eventually I was able to smile. And a lot of people said that the page really, really, really helped them. And so, yeah, I moved on to compassion pictures. But, like, that was a wonderful tool, smiling.
It really is. It really is. You got to find a sense of humor. That's the thing that really saves your hind end in this thing. And I was telling last night, I've got one for you. Just last night, anyone who was listening to Les's show last night, I apologize that you have to hear this again, but, so we just moved into this house, and I was in the kitchen, and that's kind of by the back door that goes out to the garage, and my husband said, Kim, here, he was talking to the plumber, but he said, here, Kim, the lady across the street brought this, and he handed me a box. And I took the box from him, and I turned around, and I tripped. And it was like in slow motion. You saw this small box going through the air, spinning round, boom, landing on the top. And I went, oh, I caught myself before I fell. I just tripped. And I picked it up and opened it up, and it had been a cake, but it said Elkham. All the frosting was on the lid of this box. And so Gary came in a few minutes later, and I had this big wad of frosting on my finger that I was eating. And he said, what is that? I said, well, it was an Elkham cake from the lady across the street. I'm going to have to send her a thank you note.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, you got to find your laughs where you can, in your behavior. And it's funny, some of the regulars on my show know that in the winter, well, I drink it iced in the summer, but I drink a lot of green tea. And in the winter, though, I'll turn on my tea kettle and then I'll forget. And all of a sudden, the audience on more than one occasion is heard, the whistle, and so the regulars who listen to my show know things about me that would have horrified me if, people would. I spent so many years hiding these things, and now, I laugh because people will make comments, about me forgetting the tea kettle. Something shiny is something I say pretty often when I just, like, totally lose my train of thought or something catches my attention and then I just can't track back to where I was before. It's a something shiny moment, and it's kind of funny. For me, it was great to be in a place where people did understand the silent epidemic and the not so silent epidemic. But as I said, it seems like the people that have more obvious physical residuals seem to get cut more slack than those of us that it isn't visual or obvious. They're
right.
Not in our shoes. Now, in my case, I lived alone for a lot of years, and I tried faking it, out in public, but I can't tell you how many nights I came home to my little house alone and cried or was just so exhausted from trying to be somebody I wasn't anymore.
Yes.
That I would sleep a lot. But it's funny because when you said that, a lot of us develop sleep issues after our brain injuries, it seems, and insomnia, either sleeping too much or sleeping too little, which I know can be symptoms of depression, but I don't know that is always the case, for as frequently as I've heard sleeping disorders be one of the residuals that people mention as frequently as they mention things like short-term memory and sensory overload and full basket syndrome and those kinds of things. So I think that's one that goes right in there with our top 10, I think, that we're left with a lot of times. And it's nice to be in a place where people understand that, because like you alluded to earlier, you know, too many people get sent, you know, after they've been pelted with the pill du jour from the traditional medical model and that hasn't worked, you know, they get shifted into the, you know, down the psychiatric path. And,
right.
You know, one night I made a joke and I said, if you weren't crazy before, after you've had a brain injury that nobody's diagnosed for a year, you probably do need to be at the damn psychiatrist's office, you know. If you weren't nuts before from your brain injury, the organic actual injury part of it, then you've gone nuts because of all the imbeciles who don't know what the heck's going on, you know, with you. Very hard to describe that stuff. But, folks, I'm getting ready to take some calls in a minute. If you have any questions or comments for Ruby, call in on 424-243-9540. And I have another list here. Let me grab it. Getting used to my new layout here. Everything's backwards. Or you can call toll-free 855-473-3711 in the U.S. or 202-559-7907 outside the U.S. for free. So again, 424-243-9540. Ruby and I are going to be winding down in a few minutes, and feel free to call and be sure to press 1, and I'll let you on the line for any questions or comments you might have for Ruby. So laughing, you're going to be doing, that's great. So you go from compassion to a sense of humor, which are really, I think, integral pieces of recovery. You know, you got to get it. Not only compassion for others because of the experience you've had, but compassion for yourself. You know, I know I spent a lot of time with negative self-talk because I felt less than, not different than, but less than, because I couldn't be and do what I could do before. And it was devastating to me. And you talked earlier about how you helped younger girls develop their self-esteem. And I tell you, I think mine might have been okay until I had the brain injury. And first of all, the zipper head part after my craniotomy, that's my humor on that. You know, being part bald and looking like Frankenstein when a lot of my life had been defined by what I look like and how I carried myself. And I wasn't looking that way for a while until I felt like a middle-aged, no offense out there, fellas, don't get mad at me, but I felt like a middle-aged man there for a while, because as soon as was possible, I got bangs cut and did a comb-over, you know, with my hair so that my scar didn't show. And I tried, you know, I played right into the silent epidemic, you know, by hiding any remnant that was left in as much as I could, you know. And the other thing I had going for me is that I was blonde. So when I am blonde, so when I forget things, I would turn it into a blonde joke. So that humor you're talking about, you know, I fooled people a lot of the time, you know, and didn't have to be honest with myself or others because I played it off as a blonde joke.
Right.
So I had all the material there, none of the support and all of the material, you know, to be able to practice avoidance, you know, avoidance of what my new reality was going to be. And that really is not doing yourself a favor, folks, because it just slows up the inevitable if you're going to move forward. You know, if you're going to move forward, you just get in your own way. And I find that, you know, that's something, you know, when we were talking about...
But that takes time. I feel that, that, I feel that every step is the right step. So like, so like denial, that is the right step. Acceptance, that is the right step. But like, and like, this is another thing within the TBI community, the brain injury community, you are either super, super positive or you are super, super negative, negative, and there's no gray. It's a rarity.
Right.
And like sometimes, you know what? We just have to be wherever we are. We need to just accept that. When I am having a bad day, I freaking embrace that fully. I'm not going to try to make it into a sunshine day when I feel like crap. I give myself a pity party.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know what? I am able to like move on.
Right.
Not the next day, maybe not. But eventually I just move forward. Sometimes like people try to deny what they like feel. And like to me that's freaking insane. Feel it.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel bad. We are not going to feel great every single moment. That is a lie.
Yeah.
And what is it? I had to really, really accept that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's okay to feel bad. It's okay to freaking embrace that too.
And you know why it's important that you bring that up, you know, a very important thing, because one of the deals I've heard, well, myself and other people talk about, and hang on, callers, I'm coming, is a lot of us felt guilt and shame afterward because we knew that we should feel gratitude because our life was spared. And so it's a double bind. On one hand, you're feeling gratitude because your life was spared, and on the other, you're hurt, angry, confused, and all this negative emotion, and so you feel guilt and shame, or at least a lot of people do, and I know that I did, because I couldn't live up to my own expectations or to other people's expectations. And so I think what you said is very important, and repeating that there's already that we're at, and it might be at that stage. We just have to set our intent that we plan to move forward ultimately, and then a day at a time, we live. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to have a pity party where it's social, not just a feeling that you're moving through. You know, you want to let go of that at some point and move forward. And one thing that you always know, no matter how you're feeling, real good or real bad, is that it ain't going to last, because life is a series of peaks and valleys.
Exactly. And like, the wonderful thing is emotions are just
that they are neither good nor bad. They are just emotions. Sad, angry, happy, joy. There is no good or bad. They are just simply emotions. And, like, that's a wonderful thing. You know why? Because we are able to feel. Once you are able to what is this, feel, you are alive and well. I don't care what the hell you basically feel. Whatever you feel, you are alive and well. Good, bad, happy, sad, joyful, angry. You know what? I feel that. So that tells me I am alive and I am well. And am I better? Better may never come, but I am alive and I am well. You know, and, like, that's my philosophy. That's my philosophy. I accept it all. Because it's not about me. It is all about God. Ruby Taylor is going to fall short every single day. But it does not even matter, because I have a God who basically fills in every single gap and every deficit that I have. So I don't care how I feel. I'm just happy that I can even feel. And I am alive and I am well.
And that's a good way to look at it. There are a couple people that have questions for you, but before we go there, Ruby, Ruby is excited about offering her free ebook, 99 Problems and My Brain is One, and you can get information about that. They say if you want a free download, and then you put in some information. But again, it's at compassionpictures.net, her website. And it's such a gracious thing. You know, she was talking earlier about leaving the book behind after the journal got lost and going into film, but did go on to write this ebook. And now, unlike some we've been hearing about lately that are making millions for compilations of our brain injury stories, you are a survivor who's written a story that you're giving away to people. So that's a very gracious gesture on your part, and I commend you for doing so. So everybody, check out 99 Problems and My Brain is One. You can get that free download at Ruby's website, compassionpictures.net. Is there anything you want to tell us about the book before we go to a couple questions?
Well, the book is funny, but the book also gives tips on how family, friends, and professionals can help deal with and support traumatic brain injury survivors. And it's funny because it shows my, like, story in, like, really, really short snippets. And like, I hope you like it, but if you don't, it doesn't matter because it is free.
Yeah,
so,
there you go. You can't beat the price, folks. You just can't beat the price. You got to check this baby out.
So, hey,
and I think that's
good. I hope
good.
You like it.
It's good.
Like
it's good. Yeah, yeah. I just Yeah, I hit the wrong key, and then we've been having a little catastrophe around here. It should be over pretty quick. I have yet another workman afraid of me, so I find that it helps from time to time. You know, I use, just like I use the blonde jokes, every now and then I use my ability to have a change in temperament on people, but it does them good to be scared of me from time to time. But anyway, again, 99 problems in my brain is one. It's not only for survivors, but of course survivors are going to relate because it's written by a survivor, but she's also trying to help professionals and family members, caregivers understand as well. So I hope that you will check out Ruby's book. And now are you ready to take a couple questions or comments?
Sure am.
Okay. Area code 718. You've been holding a long time. You're on the line, 718. Who do we have?
Hello.
Whoa. Can you turn down your speakers, please?
Okay.
It's okay. It just creates a little feedback and echo, and we'll be able to hear you better. Are you with us, 718?
Yes, I am.
And now we can't hear you. Okay, tell you what, I'll come back to you in just a minute. Why don't you try to turn down those speakers just a little bit, and then we weren't able to hear you. So you can dial in to 424-243-9540. And if you have your computer on, too, just turn down your speakers or we get some god-awful feedback and very hard to hear you, and we want to be able to hear your question. Area code 347, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Arlene Taylor.
Hi there.
That's my mother. Hold on one second. Let me turn this off. Hold on one second.
Oh, okay. Trying to fool with us, Ruby.
That's my mom. I don't know what she's going to say, but I'm going to pray really hard right about now.
Well, she just hung up.
Oh, so I don't know. She probably. Okay.
Oh.
We're just going to move
come
on.
Back, Mom. Come back, Mom. We're going to try 718 again. Hi, 718. Hello there. You sound real good now.
Okay, good. Since you're brain engine, and you seem to get a good hold on it by listening to you. Do you feel now that you can maybe that God will send you someone in your life that you could care for you like a friend, like a male friend? You feel
that
you're
God.
Able to handle
okay.
that?
Mother, here we go. My mother.
My has a sense of humor,
me,
too.
My mother wants me married and to have a couple of kids, but I don't think that's in my cards. But,
okay.
But here goes the but. I told my mother recently there was this male. His name is Ron, and he just calls me too much. He's just a pain in my ass. And, like, I don't like any men who are, like, thirsty. I like for men to just let me, like, breathe. I cannot stand somebody that, like, hovers. And so my mother just like, wants me to be, like, to be married. She doesn't care who I marry. So, Mom, to answer your question, Will I ever settle down? Yes. Eventually, yes. God will send me somebody who will be able to understand me and, like, who will give me space. I don't like a man who does not give me space. I need a lot of space.
Yes, and that's
but
what
I
I'm...
do.
But I do like love, attention. I love that. I love that too. But I need a balance. So, Mom,
right.
You know, I'm letting
and
you know, Ron is not the one.
No.
So just
okay,
let
no,
everyone
I don't
go.
Want you to marry anyone. I want you to be settled and be very, very happy. As I get old, I'm getting older, and I want to know that you have someone that really care for you for who you are and will accept you for who you are. That's what I'm looking for. Not anybody, not any. No. That would not satisfy
aww.
My spirit. But someone
well, Mom,
that lack you for who you are. Do you feel that that will eventually come?
Wait,
Mother,
let me answer that for you, Ruby. Hang on, let me answer that one for you. And then
okay.
I'll let Ruby answer it. You know, she's only 2 years out from her brain injury, and for at least for me, I didn't know if I was on foot or horseback. So if I, well, in fact, I'll tell you a story. I had been dating a guy when I had my ruptured brain aneurysm in January of 95. He asked me to marry him in April, and my bell had gotten rung so bad. Like I said, I didn't know if I was on foot or horseback, but I was 35 years old. I had always wanted to grow up, get married, and have a family, but I was a successful professional, having fun being a single gal, and I always thought later, later, later. So I marry this guy in October. So boom, 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 brain injury in January. I get my head sliced open and clipped. April, I get proposed to. October, I got married, and 2 years later, I was divorced, and it was because I didn't even know who I was yet, how I was going to change. And so I think the answer to your question is that absolutely, Ruby is beautiful inside and out, and she's going to find that person to care for her and to be with her as I have. But If you move on it too soon, you're going to go through some changes. And granted, in every relationship where there's two people involved, everyone goes through changes. But the more solid she gets with herself, she's going to attract the kind of person you're talking about that'll be the one that sticks. And she'll know when that person comes. And I believe that person will come.
I believe that, too. I believe
well,
I'm
so glad
thank you called.
Does that make you happy, Mom? Are you
yes,
okay now, Mother?
I'm very happy because I believe that, okay. too. I believe that.
All right.
So thank you so much for the answer. And, Ruby, God bless. Thank you. We have to laugh to keep laughing and keep smiling. I'm sure you will find that green. Okay.
I think so, too. Thanks for calling in.
Welcome. Good night.
Good night. Oh, she's so sweet, Ruby. She got you, though, didn't she?
She did.
We only get broadcast to 36 countries all over the U.S., and our live shows are all immediately archived for free on-demand listening. So Ruby's mom nailed her. That's pretty funny. Yeah. Now, let's see. Area code. Maybe
my
this is him, Ruby. This could be him, Ruby. Area code 337. You're on the air. Who do we have with us?
Is it me?
It is you. Who are you?
I'm Brandy Craft.
Hi, Brandy. Nice to
I'm
have
Brandy.
You.
Hey, Miss Ruby.
Hey.
Man, I've been listening and I've just been getting so much information. You know, I've been in the dark myself. I had my accident in 2000, and I've been going to see a psychiatrist ever since, and it's like the medicines just don't work. And I tried telling him, I've been looking up on the Internet about traumatic brain injury, and he just kind of looked at me funny. So I don't know if he understands it or not, but I mean, I've just learned so much, and I'm just so glad I was able to tune in because I couldn't get my computer to boot up at first.
Well,
okay.
We're glad you did, too. Very glad you did, too. So do you guys know each other from a support group or a Facebook page or?
Well, I first met Miss Ruby on Smile and Counts. That was the first page I found for traumatic brain injury. And I liked it because it was smiling count. So I thought, oh, well, that's something, you know, because I didn't smile a lot back then. But it's like now I look for reasons to be happy and smile.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful.
So, yes.
Well, you know, we're on.
Brandy.
Ma'am?
Yes, Brandy. Yes.
Oh. I was just going to say, I didn't know what to say. I didn't even know y'all were going to answer my call. I was just calling in to say hi.
Well, hi. We're glad that you did. You had your hand up, and I'm glad that you did, just so you can give me the opportunity to say that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with seven, well, there's more than seven. There's a show on before this one each night. So I think we have about 15, 20 different hosts now, but Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week. And if you go to braininjuryradio.org, you'll be able to see all of the different shows, and shows like this one, all the live shows are immediately archived. So you never need to be lonely in your recovery again, because even if you're not, we're on the same time every night, but different hosts, like I said, we all bring something different to the table. Some you'll like better than others, but everybody can find somebody that they can relate to, and you can go back and listen to the archive shows. And Ruby, if you don't mind, since my phone dropped me at the beginning, one of our hosts, she's on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month before my program, Lori Purdy Fatel, sent out a memo that I've been reading. Do you know someone who has suffered brain injury, concussion, contusion, closed head injury, traumatic brain injury, acquired brain injury, anoxia, hypoxia, dementia, tumor, stroke, aneurysm, amnesia, Parkinson's, brain cancer? A survivor support line is now available to provide telephone support to those who suffer from all levels of brain impairment. The number 4 peer, P as in Paul, E-E-R, 1-1, 4 peer 1-1 is a survivor-run, funded, operated, and managed emotional helpline. We do not give medical advice, but we do have 2 compassionate ears. We have survived some form of brain injury, or we are a survivor who is significant in the life of another survivor. The number to call there is 855-473-3711 or 855-4-PEER-11. Live operators are available from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If a call comes when an operator is not free, please leave a message. Messages are returned on a regular basis. Again, that's 855-473-3711, and that's one survivor talking to another. So between Brain Injury Radio, where you can hear enlightened guests like Ruby and hear other survivors interact and talk in this forum, you can also use the peer support line for one-on-one support. And if you don't have a recovery group, a support group in your area, or even if you do and maybe they only meet once a month and you need something a little more than that, I encourage you to try the 4-PEER-11 support line and to tune in to Brain Injury Radio. You meet a lot of nice people here, and I tell you, it's made a huge difference in my life. I crack wise on here from time to time and say it only took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to find out anything about brain injury. So if there is hope for me, there's hope for all of you out there as well. So I'm real happy that you called in tonight, Brandy.
Oh, well, thank you.
Come back again.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Did you have something else?
Oh, no, ma'am. No, I could just ramble on, and my thoughts aren't really collected. I was shocked that I got on.
Well, you had your hand up. We do that around here, you know. But I tell you what, in just a minute, we're going to be winding up the interview, and in the second half of the show, it's open mic, and I play some indie music, and so if anybody has anything that they want to talk about, whether it's about the interview tonight or anything else that's on your mind, you can call in. I would encourage everybody who's raised your hand to hit one again, to put your hand down now, and then hit one again when you're ready to talk again. And I'll put you on park you for just a second there. Brandy, you did. Brandy, I know you're still listening. Yeah, hit one, and that'll bring your hand back down. And then when we're in the second part of the show in a few minutes, if you want to talk again, please feel free to hit one, and I'll bring you back on the line, and you can ramble, as you say, as much as you like. I do it every week, so feel free to do that. It looks like we've got another 718 caller with their hand up. I don't think it's – nope. They want to – oh, no, here they are. Okay. Area code 718, you're on the line with Kim and Ruby. Who's this?
Yes, this is Annette Taylor.
Hello, Annette. Welcome.
Okay, I'd like to say hello to Ruby. How are you?
I'm fine, sister. This is my sister, Annette.
Well, hello, sister. It's a family affair tonight. We like
it
that
is.
Around
hello.
Here.
Thank you. You know, I wanted to ask Ruby Taylor, I would like to know about your support group before and after, which was the most comforting to you.
Annette, are you trying to set me up? I think my sister's trying to set me up to say that my most support. Huh?
Yeah. No, like before and then after.
My support before and my support after?
Right, like before you, like when you had your injury and then like a little in between after you recognize exactly what was going on, what was the situation.
Okay, so my wonderful support before has always been my family and my friends and my wonderful dog, Lucky. I love that dog.
Aww.
But at any rate, and so my support after would like still be my family and my wonderful friends. And like you have always been a wonderful support ever
well,
since
exactly
I was.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. You
hey,
have answered
Annette.
My question.
Good answer, Ruby.
Now
good answer.
Now everybody heard this, so now you cannot deny it.
That's right. Now, Annette, did you recognize after the car accident changes in Ruby? Did you notice them?
Yes, I did.
Do you think you noticed them before she did?
Let's see. Maybe somewhat. I think maybe somewhat. I kind of like at first was noticing a change because we used, you know, we'll always joke a lot. And
really?
We would always play like practical jokes. And then when one day I realized I went a little too far with the joke because I really didn't realize the extent of her injury. So that didn't come out so well. So I got a little bit, you know, cussed out about that. So I kind of like realized that there was a change, you know, and so it was a little bit, you know, devastating to me because we always joked a lot. And like she said earlier, she always came home and you know, it was like Ruby's home. Oh, my God, everything stopped because, you know, this is like $1 million. You know, we all travel all over the place, go to Dunkin' Donuts. We go, we just went all over the place. So I noticed when she came home, she wasn't able to do that like she usually. So, yeah, it, you know, I noticed it, you know, after, you know, a couple of times.
And it sounds like you've accepted her and embraced the change.
Yes, I have. I really have. You know, cause there's more to love now, just a little different. But now I understand it, you know, a whole lot. So now, to me, it's still Ruby, you know, because she's still laughing in spite of it all. So that makes me feel better.
Great. Well, I'm so glad you called in, Annette. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you also to you. And I hope both of y'all have a blessed evening.
Thank you.
You too.
And you too, Annette.
Oh, okay.
Love you.
Then. Okay, love you too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, you got a sweet family there, Ruby.
I do. They are a wonderful support. You can see they are a wonderful supporter. Wonderful.
And no wonder you got that sense of humor thing going on. All the ladies in the house say, yeah. You old enough to remember that?
Yes, I am. I'm old enough for that.
Oh, okay. Now the audience probably didn't know what we were talking about, but I remember all too well out on that disco floor, all the ladies in the house say, ah. Okay. Never mind, Kim. All right. Well, in fact, now I'm going to do something, and then, Ruby, you can think of making any final thought, but just because you did this, I'm going to flip down here and do something that my regular listeners are used to hearing me do. It's 55 seconds for you to collect your thoughts. But a lot of times, you know, because our hosts are scattered all over the country, and as I said, we do stream from about 136 different places all over the U.S. and the 36 countries, people often ask, now, where is that Hump Night host, Kim, from? And this is what I tell them. Can you guess?
Omaha, Nebraska. Oh, yeah.
Now, this fellow, not the one singing, that's White Mike, Flo Kane, and I can't remember the third guy. I apologize. They're separate rappers here in the Midwest, but a fellow named Jeremy Partridge, and if you go on YouTube, he's a filmmaker. Jeremy, I friended him on Facebook when I asked him if I could play his song, considering where I'm from and what I do. I got kind of a kick out of it, and I'll tell you another funny story about that. But anyway, he did two tours, has done two tours in Iraq, and came back and became a film major in school. And under that YouTube, he's got a lot of parody videos that he's made. So not only does he have that, and he is married, so he's not the one, but in any case, you know, parody, he's got the laughter going on, and film, he's got the film going on, and that's where I happened to catch this Omaha rap video, and then got a hold of Jeremy to ask him if I could use a snippet of it on my show. So thank you, Jeremy. for letting me do that. And so that's pretty cool. So here's the funny part of it. These little grands, 4 and 7 years old, and they came to spend the night, and this was back around, I think, the holidays when I got this, when I discovered that piece of music. And it's really catchy because it's 3 and 3, where you come from, where you come from, where you come from. Now we done said it, now we done said it, now you all say it. And that's all it is. And these two little girls spent the night with us. Their folks went out to a holiday party. So the next morning they were probably feeling a little, you know. Well, the girls, I taught them this, and they picked it up, boom, just like that. And so what would a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old do the next morning when they got home? They sang it all day long. While their parents weren't necessarily feeling at the top of their game the morning after the night before, you know what I mean? But so I got a little bit of a sense of humor too, I think.
Yes. Yes, you do. I do agree. And that's a good thing.
Ruby, is there anything you'd like to leave the audience with? It's been a real pleasure having you tonight, and I'm so blessed that we met and appreciative of you coming on the show tonight. And I want to make sure to say again that you guys want to check out her website at www.compassionatepictures.net and do request a free download of her ebook, 99 Problems and My Brain is One, and share it. You know, tell a friend, tell a family member, and download these Can't Beat the Price. Will inform, enlighten, and leave you laughing.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So my last word would be never give up.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite quote is, I will never be less than or greater than anyone. I will always be just me.
All right.
And I leave you with that. CompassionPictures.net. Please visit and spread the word. And we are coming, and I'm coming to Omaha, Nebraska.
You are?
I'm going to make that happen. I'm coming.
Oh, good.
We need to have the film show in Omaha. We need to get that support group going. So I will be in contact because, like, we're going to make that happen.
I would love to meet you in person. I think we'd just have a blast. And we'll see where Flo Kane and White Mike are. Maybe we'll see if we can get those bad boys in the movie, too.
Yes,
well,
indeed, Kim. Yes, indeed. It has been a pleasure. And I just want to say thank you so, so much, and I wish you nothing but the best.
You too, Ruby. God bless. Thanks so much for being here tonight.
Thank you. Peace.
Peace out. All right, you guys, that was Ms. Ruby Taylor, and be sure to check out her website, CompassionatePictures.net. Now, I'm going to go grab my green tea. We'll come back with open mic, anything that you might want to talk about. Make sure to press 1, and I'll know that you want to talk, or we'll be listening to some indie music, and I'll share some antidotes in between. This is something that any of us survivors or caregivers listening to the show tonight are all very aware of. And it happens to be by an artist whose wife, unfortunately, let's see, it would be about 8 years ago, now going on 9, had a brain aneurysm like mine. She didn't fare as well, and they were in a position where he was on Medicaid at the time, government health care plan, one of them, and they decided, it's where I learned a harsh reality, and it was something called a threshold. And a threshold is a bureaucrat deciding if you're making enough progress in a timely enough fashion to have treatment continue. And if you're not, and she wasn't, though she was progressing, not quickly enough for that bar graph, that chart, they tossed her in a nursing home where she's been warehoused and going backwards for 9 years. And her husband, Dale, is the founder of this band, Garfan. I think they have 3 CDs out, all apropos. Dinner for One is one of them. And this is a song off of that. This is Garfan with Borrowed Time. And I'll be back with you in a little over 5 minutes. And we'll start round 2.
About me, how to live a lousy and die.
That was Dale Hayes and Garfan. You can find him at Garfan, GARFAN.com, or if you're on Facebook.com/GarfanBand, and that's borrowed time. And Dale has stayed married to Deb for these 9 years, has been powerless to work the system, and that's one of the things we talk about here is, the history of the brain injury movement, the disability movement, where warehousing people like is being done today to this woman, has gone on all over the world and is still going on in some places. And we're trying to fight that and raise awareness. And theirs is a tragic love story, if you will, because he's somebody who stood by her. And I think that's great. And I'm sure that she does too. Unfortunately, she, like I said, has gone backward, got to the point since she wasn't getting any therapy where her hand started clenching so hard that it wouldn't unclench. It was like it was stuck in a clench position, and they weren't clipping her nails. And so she was cutting the palm of her hand. And instead of trimming her nails and giving her some physical therapy, they cut the nerve in her hand so that her fingers couldn't go into a fist anymore and get stuck. And that was in 2013. And if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what would. In any case, it's been an interesting, month for me, but we just moved in town, in the same town, just to another house last Thursday. And so things have been very hectic, and number of things have come up. I won't tell you about all of those tonight. Some of you might know, if you're my friend on Facebook, you'll see some pictures I just posted. Some of you noticed I was conspicuously absent for quite a while, and I was just running on overload, operation overload. Still am, but I always look forward to this, to being here with you guys, because it's a reprieve for me. I don't have to think about all those boxes I need to unload. You know what? They're still going to be there tomorrow, next day, the next day, however long it takes me to get it done. But one of the things that I've been trying to laugh about is all the walls I'm running into around here. I'm trying to navigate in the dark, not in the dark all the time. Obviously, there's sun in Omaha, Nebraska, but at night, you know, in my other house, I would know in the dark exactly where I was going, like when I'd get off the show or get ready to go to bed and turn off the lights in the house. And I don't know this house yet. I've only been here since Friday. And so there hasn't been a night yet since Friday. So what's that? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And it was just yesterday that I kind of short-clipped the corner is what made me trip in my new kitchen and toss the cake, the Elkham cake from my new neighborly neighbor. So I will go over and hank her tomorrow for that cake. That was a rightly neighborly thing to do. And introduce myself. Her name should be easy to remember. My husband told me it was Kim. So what a coincidence. My neighbor, we'll just have a neighborhood that will be very easy to remember. And I can already tell who the nosy neighbor is. We all got one of those, right? And for those of you who know about Benny and Libby and Sophie and Mario, my four dogs, and Petey Bird, they are really happy in their new digs. They had almost 3/4 of an acre of yard before, and now they've got about a half acre, but they are loving it. Mario and Sophie are senior citizens now, so they don't need any more room than what they've got. Danny's kind of lazy, and when we moved to our other home, we had Annie, who was a German Shepherd, and she passed a little over 2 years ago. And, well, so I've been a host a little over 2 years ago, because that happened right at the beginning of me being a host. And so I was able to share, I've been able to share my joy and my grief with my audience. And I appreciate you guys being out there listening, sharing of yourself, giving of yourself, and participating. Earlier in the show, Skype dropped my call in the first 5 minutes, and so I didn't get a chance to thank our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, or my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. I encourage you to check out their website, and I will type it in here, LA Publishing, oops, sorry, I'm typing with two left thumbs or something. Must be all that moving I've been trying to do. My dexterity is kind of screwed up. LAPublishing.com. And what you'll find there is that Lash publishes all brain injury-related material, whether it's for the survivor, the caregiver, the neuroprofessional, other interested parties. They have a large section of tools for veterans. And what was I going to say? Caregivers, veterans. And they are the foremost producer of brain injury-related material. So be sure to check them out. I think they're giving away some free tip cards right now. And if you don't know what that is, you'll have to go to their site to see. They're kind of prompters for us who have short-term memory problems. And so that's a good thing. But the best thing of all is if you look, if you go to that website and you see Brain Injury Journey, Brain Injury Journey, click on that and it will take you to their magazine. That's the name of their magazine. It comes out 4 times a year, and you'll see that you can have a paid subscription, the hard copy, sent to your home, or, like with Ruby, can't beat the price, you can get the free online version of Brain Injury Journey, and it is chocked full of wonderful informative pieces by survivors and caregivers and neuroprofessionals. And I encourage you to subscribe to their magazine, have it sent to you, whether it's hard copy or the free online copy, they're exactly the same, and you will really enjoy what you read. I know you'll take something away from every magazine, as I have, so I want to thank Lash Publishing for sponsoring my show. And let's see, any other housekeeping I forgot early on? You always hate it when you get kicked off your own show 5 minutes into it in a new place. So I'm very grateful. That's why I started my interview out right away. I thought if it was going to be one of those nights of technical difficulties, I didn't want to shortchange my guest. So again, my guest was Ruby Taylor. I want to thank her for being on tonight. Wonderful woman with a terrific sense of humor. And at 2 years out from her injury, I think she's doing a great job and was very blessed to have a team that was on the ball, a medical team that was on the ball, that recognized what was going on with her, as well as a supportive family. We should all be so lucky, right? If you have any questions or comments, call in to 424-243-9540. And I'm going to play a song. We alluded to it earlier that we all have good days and bad days. And this song was actually made famous by someone else. And everybody always quotes that person as being the one responsible for this song. But when I went to get his permission, I found out that that wasn't the case. He was just the one that made the song popular. The actual person who wrote the song, performed it first, and owns the rights to it is a man named Gary Nicholson, who is in Tennessee, and he's won 2 Grammy Awards for blues music, and this is his song, Good Days, Bad Days.
Everybody wants to know how I get along in these dark days since you've been gone. Sometimes I'm fine, sometimes I'm dying, stumbling through one step at a time. I have home
That was Gary Nicholson. You can find him at www.garynicholson.com, or if you're on Facebook, check him out and like him at facebook.com/GaryNicholsonMusic. Right? Yeah, Gary Nicholson Music. Very good guy. I got the opportunity to talk to him and his son, who runs his production company. And they heard about what we do here on Brain Injury Radio, and we're proud, as he put it, to stand by us. So again, we appreciate all of our indie musicians who allow us to play their music on our show to help entertain you guys. I was going to reach for something, but I'm tethered. If Craig ever hears this show, he'll know I'm usually completely wireless. And when I was moving, I kind of abused my headset a little bit. And so now I'm tethered to my computer, and I can't walk around without it. And so I left something in the other room, and I'm going to have to carry you all with me if I want to get it and read it. Again, if you guys have any questions or comments, 424-243-9540 and press 1. That's how we signify that your hand is up and you would like to talk. Moving. Boy, you know, one of the things they tell you is not to make major decisions. After you first have your brain injury, for example, they tell you not to make major life-changing decisions because you're not in a state of mind at that time where you can necessarily make intelligible decisions. And that was exactly what I did when I was talking earlier and telling Ruby's mom about my brief first marriage. Was getting married within months of having my brain injury. Well, heck, my bell had gotten rung so hard, and I got married for all the wrong reasons, because it had always been a childhood dream. I wanted to do it. My God, I was 35, and I almost died and missed it. So, of course, I was going to say yes. But the point of the matter is, I wasn't the person that person started dating or had been dating for a year. I changed, and I didn't understand the ways I was changing, and I wasn't validated in the ways that I was changing. And interestingly, that man I was putting through medical school, and back then they were starting to call us exposure units. And I thought that was ominous, that instead of being patients, people first, that we were becoming corporate medicine, and we were becoming exposure units. The health insurance actuaries were calling us exposure units, and oh my God, now the doctors were being groomed that way too. And some of you, again, I apologize if you were at Les's last night and you hear this story again, but my dad had to go to the hospital and over the weekend, the day before yesterday, was that over the weekend? Obviously, this moving has really gotten me off all my routines that keep me sane and put me in a lot of challenging positions at the same time. And there's a lot going on in my life. A lot of you know that my 94-year-old Nana is on her last days. I've been saying that for a while. Good God, she's probably going to be around longer than all of us. But she is shutting down. My dad has Parkinson's, and he had an episode and needed to go to the hospital over the weekend, and he went to the emergency room, and he was such that he couldn't move freely. And when anybody sits in any position or lays in any position too long, they tend to get stiff. But if you've got a disease, a movement disorder, and it flares, you cannot move. You can't roll over. You just can't move without help. And he laid there for 11 hours. 11 hours in the emergency room. And nobody came and moved him or really did anything. In deference to them, and this is an interesting thing to ponder, something I didn't know about before I got here to Brain Injury Radio was about level one trauma hospitals, and that not every hospital is equipped to deal with trauma. They actually have a brand of hospital that specializes in trauma. Well, this was one of them. And so there were probably some people in there that were on the verge of life and death. They weren't just being tortured, but were maybe having an aneurysm, maybe an emergency situation. Well, is an emergency relative? You know, we might think we know what an emergency is as an observer, but if it's our emergency, if it's something we're going through, then emergency is kind of a relative thing. And a person with a movement disorder not being allowed or helped to move for 11 hours is insidious, I think, and a huge leap backwards. And what I found even more disgusting is that yesterday when I was there and I couldn't go and I felt horrible that first night, because we've always been there as a family, but we were having a major catastrophe in our new house and I had to be here. I didn't have a choice, or we weren't going to have water for an undetermined amount of time. And so when I was visiting yesterday, a neurologist came in, sat down, started talking and giving some of his ideas. And he said, so we're going to discharge you. Now, mind you, they had just helped him up with the belt to make it to the restroom. And I was looking at a board at the foot of his bed that said high fall risk and some other things. And this guy is saying, you're going to be discharged. This is within 24 hours. They don't keep you for chronic things. They kick you. They observe you. Makes you feel a little like a rat, right? They, quote unquote, observe you. And then they give you the boot out, even if you're in crisis. Even if you live alone and you don't have anybody to help you. That's the new protocol. But what I found the biggest tell that I thought was most insidious is that this doctor, a real live doctor, a neurologist, had written orders saying that he thought that he should stay a couple days. And he was overridden by a bean counter. So a pencil-pushing bureaucrat in an ivory tower somewhere who has no contact at all was dictating his health care plan, not the doctor he was seeing. And that's somewhere in Middle America in 2014. And I realized, you know, I was going to come down on him with both feet and claw his eyes out. But I had this moment of clarity that he truly was just a messenger, the doctor, the one with all the debt and the big education, was truly just a messenger who had no authority whatsoever over his patient, that a bureaucrat, bean counter, was the boss now under our new health care plan, not our doctor. And last night on Les's show, and I won't go through all of that, listen to it if you want to hear it, but we gave some examples of some things that have changed where the choice is taken out, the treatment plan is taken out of the hands of the doctors and put in the hands of a corporation. And that is a scary thought. When I was telling you earlier about Dale Hayes' wife and how she's been warehoused for 9 years, that was because of a government-sponsored health care plan. She wasn't getting well quick enough, and so they kicked her. And that's where she wound up. And then I got to see it with my own eyes yesterday, a doctor apologetically but very factually saying, I wrote out the order and I was overwritten by the accounting department. Wow. And there was nothing to yell at that messenger for. He was nobody. The doctor was nobody. The one that made the patient was nobody. The one that made all the difference was the one tracking the bottom line at that hospital. The same place that would leave someone suffering, who, by the way, his comment to it, once a Marine, always a Marine, his comment to it, y'all have heard about Marine Corps boot camp, I'm sure, is that they didn't even do torture like that in boot camp. So, if you weren't alarmed before, if you haven't been in tune to the movement, the disability movement, I encourage you to listen on Thursdays at 5 o'clock Pacific to the Empowerment Zone. That was a brainchild of Les Paul, our regular Tuesday Dreamcatcher host. But he also recruited Ken Collins the first Thursday of each month, Constance Miller the second Thursday, Les does the third, and then they do a roundtable on the fourth. And it's all about independent living. And Ken Collins and Constance have been around this rodeo for a while, and they would tell you that things like this were so common decades ago, and that we've been trying to work hard to go the other direction. And unfortunately, what I've been seeing in the recent past, in the way that my grandma has been handled, so that would be Medicare at this point, soon to be Medicaid probably when they milk away her last buck, both government-sponsored health plans, and my dad, combination of the VA and private insurance under the new health care provisions, and I don't know, it scares me. It scares me for them, for the people that I love. It scares me for myself, because to know that I can't completely trust my doctor because the final word doesn't rest with him on what my treatment's going to be is a terrifying thought, and it's a really perverted notion, if you ask me. Not that you asked me, but I just thought I'd share that, because that's going on today, right now. And if it's your loved one or you, it's going to be something we're going to want to change. So the next time elections are coming, this isn't a political deal, and I'm not promoting either party. But what I'm saying is we're moving backwards. And we got to make that stop and put the doctor and the patient back in charge of the treatment plan, not a faceless, nameless bureaucrat pencil pusher in an ivory tower who is so far removed from the situation, it's easy not to care and to make a quantitative solution to a qualitative problem. So I've said my piece on that. Really made me mad, sad, scared, and sick to my stomach. On a lighter note, I'm going to play Chris Dukes, Greater Than Me, 3 minutes and 31 seconds. Facebook, facebook.com/Chris Dukes Band. Wonderful artist out of Albany. The end, and then I've got a couple callers I'll pick up, is I stood up and all I could do is look at the doctor and get up with my camera and go to that dry erase board and say, I hope bean cutter doesn't cut off their nose despite their face trying to save a buck if a fall risk falls tonight for getting sprung a little too soon. And I clicked pictures off with my phone of their notes on the dry erase board. So you fight fire with fire, I guess. Okay. Familiar area code. 718, who do we have on the line?
Hello, this is Miss Taylor. I think you're amazing. You really are amazing. I listen to your story, and I hear you hurt, but yet I think you're amazing to carry on knowing what you are facing. And I just said be encouraged because I think you are so amazing. I enjoy staying on the air, listen to this song you play, and listen to your story. It is just wonderful. And I know that I'm going to listen on Thursday and hope that if we continue to listen and help, things will go forward rather than backwards.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much. I appreciate you saying that. My show's on every Wednesday night, but Brain Injury Radio is on every night of the week with different hosts. But I appreciate you calling and saying that. I appreciate the encouragement because it does hurt to be powerless.
It does because I've been there when I was on the crow farm, so I know the pains, I know the hurts, I know I have shed many tears, so I can relate to your hurt, and yet you must still hold your head up and keep forward, keep your head and chin up, knowing that it will be better days. I found better days. I ran away from home at the age of 13, and I found a better place by keeping on going on and never looking back and not giving up. Don't give up. Don't give up the ship. You are amazing.
Well, thank you so much. We got to be there. Got to be there for each other.
Yes, we do, because I've been there, so I can feel your hurt. But yet, I still can't stop saying you are amazing in Christ. Keep going. God bless you. Have a good night.
Thank you so much. God bless you. I appreciate calls like that. Thank you. Area code 337, you're on the line. Who do we have?
This is Brandy Thick-Pancraft again.
Hi there.
Hello. I just want to repeat what Miss Taylor just said because I was going to say all that, but just the music and what you've been talking about, and I feel so bad for your dad and your family, and I didn't know what else to say, but I was fixing to get off, but I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed it tonight.
Thank you so much. Ruby was a great guest, and I just kind of tell some personal stories in between people like you calling in, and I'm blessed to have some great indie artists. And, you know, we all have challenging times in our life, but I guess I want to try to be of service to them, because obviously they're not getting the kind of service they used to, and so somebody's got to be the strong one, the one who can show up and be there. And there was a time, and Ruby talked about it earlier, in the beginning of our brain injuries when self was about as far as I could think. Right. And then Ruby talked about the compassion we wind up getting if we didn't have it before. We get it in spades through a lot more dimensions when we go through something like this ourselves. And I know that I get more agitated when there's tension in the air. I also know that that disease is brain, you know, it's another brain disease, and that it wouldn't help the bottom line for me to get angry and get him agitated over a bureaucratic rule that was not going to budge that minute. The doctor
that's
had already.
That's shame. I mean,
you know,
that's coming.
Yeah.
Because that could affect all of us.
And it will. I mean, the doctor got slapped down, so, you know, what am I going to do except upset my family member by talking down somebody who has no authority anymore? You know, I wanted to break down and cry, and I did when I left. But while I was there, you know, I had to be the voice of reason in as much as I could be. But it just, one of the things that being around here on Brain Injury Radio has done for me is opened my eyes as to the reality that's going on, and I don't have the same lack of awareness which led to apathy, I guess, before. I was blessed that my family, my folks are in their early 70s, and they had never been sick a day in their life. And for that, I'm very grateful. I never had those kind of experiences growing up, but, you know, now my mom's got leukemia, and my dad is going into his 10th year of Parkinson's, and I'm an only child, so I don't have a lot of people to commiserate, you know, with about these things that are going on. And we have some hosts on here that were neuroprofessionals for their long careers, and then they became survivors, and they make interesting hosts because it's from doctor to survivor, and another one that's from doctor to caregiver, and he was a neuropsychologist, so that's Dr. Orr, and so he had been caregiving for people in his career for 30 years, and then his wife wound up having a brain injury, and now he's a caregiver on the home front. He can't seem to get away from that role in his life, I guess. That's just what he's destined to do. And the other one was a neuropsychologist who did work with first everyone, and then he specialized with children, and he, about a year and a half ago, had a brain injury, and now he is one of our hosts, Dr. Nielsen, and he's a survivor, a doctor who became a survivor, and boy, does he look back and challenge everything that he stood for and that he did now that he is a patient.
Right.
And so I was very sad, of course, that these things happened to these men, but there's a message in it, and I was glad to have them come aboard as hosts because they've come through a real process of, you know, realization, and I'm hoping that people like that can help change this system, because if it takes all of them becoming a patient just once to find out what a horrible, horrible direction they're heading. But, you know, the doctors know it, and now it's in the hands of the bean counters and politics. And so if medicine is going to go to politics, then each one of us have a duty to vote, you know.
Right.
And to open our eyes and to be aware of what's going on so that we can impact that difference, because somebody else already did it for us. You know, they
so
took the reins for us.
We need to call for that.
We do. We do.
Yes, who would we need to call, though?
Oh, well, your state legislators would be a good place to start. You know, if you're if you have your state senator, governor, you can start with your mayor and work your way up. But anybody who will listen, you tell them your story. I like to tell people, I tell a lot of people about Brain Injury Radio almost every day I'm mentioning it, so that people know that something like that exists. And then
right,
their
I had
stories.
Never heard of that. But I got it pulled up on my computer right now. Is it Brain Injury Radio Network or Brain
yes.
Injury? Oh, it's Radio Network?
It is. It's Brain Injury
okay.
Radio Network, but the website is braininjuryradio.org.
Radionetwork.org.
It's actually just, our network is called Brain Injury Radio Network, but the website, there's no network on it. It's just braininjuryradio.org.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
And it's a good idea. You give me, again, you give me another segue. I love that about you, to tell the audience things. But if you go to braininjuryradio.org, I encourage you to sign up to get a username and password. And this is a really wonderful site because it pulls everything we do together. Some of you that were here earlier who heard me talk about the peer support line for Peer 11 and Brain Injury Radio and how to start a support group and a lot of other information that's under the umbrella of TBI Survivor Network has all been pulled together on this one website so that you don't have to go look in 59 different places. We've consolidated it all to one place so that people can find this information in one place and hopefully get some help. And those are the kind of things, too, that you can ask the folks at for Peer 11 because they have a list of referral numbers, and they might be able to give you some good advice of places where your voice can be heard. And, of course, there's the old-fashioned way. You know, I'm old enough to be an older hippie. You know, we used to have demonstrations and do public things like through the associations and the alliances that help raise awareness. I know that the National Safety Council, and they have offices all over the country, has been doing a lot on fall prevention lately. And, you know, talking to them about, now they're primarily talking about fall prevention for the elderly, but talking to a place like that, well, and also the helmet. They got big on the helmet laws. But talking to places like that, because they have a lot of power politically being a national organization. Sometimes we've had some difficulty with the alliances and the associations because they do a lot of good things, raising awareness and advocacy, some of them do, but that doesn't do a lot for the people that are survivors right now having trouble. And they don't necessarily help people put together support groups or tell people how to lobby to change these kind of things because that's just not where their thrust is. You'd think that a place called a Brain Injury Association or Alliance would be the kind of place that would be looking out for us politically, but they're not. We are. So, you know, I encourage you all to contact your legislators and or go visit an emergency room and see how different it looks since the last time you were there or how long you're waiting for your doctor's appointment. I brought up one the other night, you know, that for half a century, they told us women we needed a pap smear every year. It was mandatory, you know, that this cancer was so common, we had to have this test every year. And suddenly, surprise, when the new health care law came into effect, one way the bean cutters could save counters could save money is by changing. Now we're only allowed to get that once every 2 years. Now, is that because they were wrong for half a century, or is that because they're trying to save money now?
I think because they're trying to save money, because I'm also a cancer survivor, and my doctor told me if I hadn't gone in that day soon, that it could have spread throughout my whole body. It was that kind of cancer that didn't go cell to cell. It would just jump from, you know, organ to organ. Well, they found it in one special space, so they radiated it out. And now I don't have cancer anymore, but I had to have a hysterectomy. But I'm just saying, if you're talking about, like, cervical cancer, those cancers, they say, grow slow. But if you don't, I mean, within a year, a lot could grow.
Oh, yeah, two years, you know, 2 years they're making us wait now. So in 2 years, a lot can grow. And I tell you, anytime you got to be cut on for anything, you want to catch it as soon as you can to have the least amount of damage control. You let something go 2 years, and yes, what you're talking about is exactly true. And Les told a story last night about a man, and Les couldn't remember whether the man had a cataract or macular degeneration, exactly what the man's visual impairity was, but the man was supposed to have surgery, and he had gotten approved to have the surgery. And in the meantime, he had a birthday, and he turned 70. And when he went to get the surgery, they told him he no longer qualified because he was over the age limit allowed to have that surgery. So if he would have had it before his birthday, he'd be able to see clearly today. And because he wasn't able to, he'll probably be blind within a year.
See, that's infuriating that they can do that kind of stuff.
And what's even more infuriating is we let them. You know, we let them.
Yeah,
not all of us.
We don't know.
Right, right. Well, and frankly, in fairness, the people that voted for it, the legislators, they didn't know either because they were given a 1,200-page document at midnight and told to read it by 7 in the morning and vote by 8. So, you know, I'm not too sure many of them knew what they were voting for.
There was no way they could have known, even if they were speed readers, you know.
That's
they
right.
They could have never read all that.
Nope. They couldn't have read all that, and that's why now, you know, we're talking more and more about being our own advocate while we can be our own advocate. And then we're able to help others as well, and part of that is by getting the knowledge and education to know, not education in that way, but, you know, just to be aware of what's going on out there so that we can impact and make a difference when it comes, you know, to who we're picking out in politics, regardless of party, to make decisions for us, because the decision they made was to take the decision out of the doctor's hands and put it in the hands of a bureaucrat who's never seen you, and it's easy to not care about you. Out of sight, out of mind. You're a number.
That just sounds crazy, though.
Doesn't it?
You know, that they would take the authority away from the doctor.
I thought so, too. But I was afraid. I spent before my brain injury, I spent 25 years in the insurance field. I was a financial consultant, but one of the things I did was set up employee benefit packages for companies, and so I was very familiar with health insurance, and I was around long enough that I went through every party a couple of times, you know, and it started with the Clintons. They changed the group health insurance market, and what Obama has done is changed the individual health care market. So this has been going on for a while, you know, and they were kind of trying to turn it back a tick, but then we got in the middle of a war with the Republicans in between, you know, and I'm not saying that any party is better than another, because it all seems like a free-for-all of it's all about them and not all
That's
about their constituents.
Like.
Yeah,
right.
I think they're forgetting about who put them in office, you know, and so I want you guys, the audience, to remember that the people that put them in office can get them out of office, too. And so just be aware, you know, hear these stories, be aware. Watch what's happening with you, with your friends, with your family, as they try to get in to see a specialist, how much longer it takes to get a doctor's appointment, why people are using the emergency room as their health care plan, and that's not right, you know. People, like the story I was telling, are having to suffer because of that, and that's so wrong, You know, it's just so wrong. So I guess the message in there is just be aware. Watch what's going on around you. And, you know, don't believe just because they're saying it that it's going to be true. Watch the facts, the reality of what's happening, and then we're smart enough to make our own decision. There's a lot of people out there that think that people that have a brain injury aren't able to think intelligently anymore. Not the case.
Right.
You know, not the case. We've got a pretty big, 3.5 million a year or something, new brain injuries, and those are the ones they catch. So we know it's probably double that.
More than that, right.
Yeah, more than that in the for real. So, you know, if we were to pull together as a group, we make a huge constituency that can make a difference.
And we would. That's what we need to do, get everybody together in
a
group.
That's what we're trying to do. But, you know, it's funny how things, you know, change at a snail pace sometimes. When I started here being a host a little over a couple years ago, there was some scuttle that because I wasn't a TBI at the time, I had a brain aneurysm, which is considered an acquired brain injury. I didn't even know that back then. That there was really kind of a frat house mentality that one type of brain injury was better than another. I couldn't believe it because I heard all of them talking, no matter what, whether it was brain cancer, TBI, aneurysm, Parkinson's, that there was a dummy could figure this out. I was sitting there going, wow, they all talk about short-term memory loss. They all talk about emotion regulation problems. They all talk about multitasking, full basket syndrome, sensory overload, sleep issues. You know, there's about a top 10 laundry list that they all wind up having for residuals. You know, some or all of those things. And, you know, that's not a coincidence. The brain is the brain is the brain. So regardless of how it was assaulted or traumatized, it's the same organ. Of course, we all have our own unique story. But we also have a lot of similarities. And united, gee, I wonder where I heard this, united we stand. When we start separating and
we fall,
exactly. We fall and then somebody else picks up the reins and makes the decision for us. And they'd love nothing more than for us to be battling amongst each other so that we're not keeping our eye on the ball of what's going on out there because we're too busy competing over who has the better brain injury in our own group. And so, yes, I think I've seen a lot of change in the 2 years I've been here about acceptance for each other's brain injuries, regardless of how we got them. And I'm proud to say that here at Brain Injury Radio, you know, we did that. We started hiring hosts that have acquired brain injury, traumatic brain injury. We have a Parkinson's show. Dr. Couvant, he's on the first and third Wednesday before me, and he was a foot and ankle surgeon for 25 years and then got diagnosed in his early 50s with Parkinson's. And he happens to be down in Arizona where he's treated at the Ali Center, and because he's a doctor, he's able to get a little more insight and attention, a little bit more than your average Joe, you know, because he was a doctor in the area. And so now, you know, we're hoping to lead the way that what we need to do is band together and not splinter, because splintered we have no power and we're easy to write off by the big special interests. But if we were all together, we could become a pretty big power to reckon with.
Right. Well, what is a person to do that feels stuck? Like, I know I'm a lot better, but I know I still have a ways to go, but I don't know how to get there. I don't know what questions to ask, you know, to get me better. I just know I want to feel more productive.
Well, one thing you do is you keep trying and you try new things. If you can't do the old things anymore, then you kind of turn a negative into a positive. And I'm not saying this is easy, and I'm not saying that it doesn't take time. It does. It's a process, not a destination. But, you know, I started trying different things. And every time I would try, whether I was good at it or bad at it, I'm not going to say succeed or fail. I'm just going to say better or worse at it. It was self-esteem affirming just to try. Because it's real easy to sit on the couch and pull the covers over your head and give up after a few things don't go the way you want them to. But when you keep getting up and brushing yourself off, and trying something new, just the act of moving forward, trying to move forward, you will in increments at a time. And you'll hear things on shows like this by calling 4-PEER-1-1 if you have a physical support group in your area, by doing things like, you know, looking things up on the internet. One of the
that
things
means
that,
like Google, that doesn't mean Facebook, that means Google.
Well, yeah, it means Google. It can be Facebook. You know, sometimes there is a number of brain injury related groups on Facebook, and some of those are just where people of like mind, because they've had similar injuries, are there, and there you're going to be understood and validated, and that's a good place to go. And it's also, now that you bring it up, a very good place, because all the members of that group are in the same boat, and we've all been on the receiving end of medical care, and so that's a good place to start campaigning for groups to stay together and bond together and to pay attention to the new politics in medicine and to try to get the decisions back in the hands of the doctors and out of the hands of the bureaucrats for the good of us all. Because, my God, when you've got a corporate executive so far removed from the patient making the decision on your treatment plan, what do you think is going to happen? You know, it ain't going to be good news.
Nothing good.
No, nothing good. Nothing good at all. But it's been a pleasure talking to you about it. I hope that gives you some ideas, and I hope you'll come back to the show again. I really enjoyed meeting you tonight. We're going to be, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to park you for just a minute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just looked at the clock, folks, and I've got about 3 minutes left in the show, so I apologize for that. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight and supporting Brain Injury Radio. Also, obviously, coming to my show, Recovery Now, I appreciate all of you more than you know. You've impacted and made such a huge difference in my life, and I hope I can make just a little bit of a difference in a positive direction in your life. I'll be back next week. Can't remember who my guest is, but I'm sure it's a great one like tonight. Check out Ruby's site, and God bless you. Thank you for being here, and I'm going to close the show with something I believe we all have, and this is by Leah West, Guardian Angel, and embrace yours. Good night, everybody.
Heaven said As you grow and make your